Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
And here he is, clinical child psychologist, our regular parenting expert, Dr. David Coleman. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Philip. How are you doing?
If you have questions for David, please, you can still get them in to us by text 51551 or email todaycb@rte.ie. David, we're starting our first question. It's actually somebody who's, I suppose, an adult child rather than adult, because they are 19 years of age. And the parent writes, "My 19-year-old son recently told me that he would like to start wearing girls' clothes sometimes. This revelation came as a big surprise to me and I am worried for him. My biggest fear is for his safety. I have told him this and suggested that he takes things slowly. He says that he will, but he has already ordered a dress and tights online. My son was diagnosed with Asperger's a few years ago. Any advice re how best to guide and support him would be much appreciated." And I suppose welcome that they say that they're looking for advice on how to support their son's choice.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, it is quite a excuse me, sorry. It is quite a, I suppose, a common response from parents. I think they're less kind of concerned about the fact that their son or daughter might want to wear, you know, a different gender clothing, and probably more worried about how other people will react in those situations. And I think that's the thing, really, just to sit down and talk with them about, and talk about how you can be fully accepting of him, and that you love him, you know, exactly how he is and how he wants to be. But that it's about how other people might perceive him, and that he, I suppose, just has an awareness of that, and he's in some way prepared for other people's reactions, that he doesn't necessarily take them to heart or isn't distressed by them if some people are negative towards him. And I guess that's the fear, that people would be cruel in terms of how they'd respond to him.
How does the Asperger's affect this, do you think?
I mean, I suppose typically with Asperger's, so it's, I suppose Asperger's is an old way of describing what's now called high functioning autism spectrum disorder, so high functioning ASD. But typically young people who have high functioning ASD are more likely to have perhaps, I suppose, social communication difficulties. So it's not anything with regard to their intelligence, but it's really about perhaps how they understand the nuance in communication, or sometimes they might struggle to recognize feelings, either their own feelings or other people's feelings in conversations or communications. And so sometimes they can come across as a little bit blunt or a little bit, you know, lacking in understanding. And so it is possible, of course, that, you know, this lad, if he has high functioning ASD, does struggle with some of that as well. And so perhaps maybe isn't as attuned to other people in terms of how they're communicating with him, or the meaning that they might have, you know. So it may be that some young people, for example, might struggle with, you know, picking up tone of voice and not necessarily understanding.
Can that also be a bit of an advantage in this situation?
Sorry.
Can that also be a bit of an advantage in this situation, David? Because it would just allow him to go on with the choice that he has made and not have to worry about the nuance in people's tones and their reaction to him wearing a dress.
Yeah, for sure, it might. And yet again, I suppose it may be also that, you know, even when people aren't necessarily being mocking, that he might perceive something about their reaction that is negative, when in fact it's not. And so, you know, it is often about the meaning that comes behind the bare words. I mean, I often talk, you know, when we see texts coming in, we're often struggling to understand the context. And so we do rely on all that emotional tone that comes with how something is said, not just what gets said. And so that might be the bit, again, with his parents, though, just to talk with him about that and just to help him navigate all of that. I mean, that's really, when it comes to supporting young people, it's not necessarily about trying to get them to change. It's just about letting them know that, you know, whatever is going on for them, that you're willing to listen and do your best to understand. And if there's particular support or help or advice that you can give, great. You know, you might be in a position to do that. But sometimes it's just about walking alongside them, going, you know, you're not on your own with this.
Just be present. Okay, let's move on to another one from a mother who writes, "Can you ask Dr. Coleman about emotional regulation of a 10-year-old boy? He's really struggling at school. He was recently diagnosed with dyslexia. His behaviour ranges from anxiety to anger to despair. He cries a lot doing his homework. homework. Also playing football if other boys don't pass the ball. They tell him he's no good at football in goals or on the field, and he's getting really upset and he cries. He wants to be homeschooled, which is not possible as I work. I'm very, very worried about him. Please help.
Yeah, I mean, that's just very difficult. I think it sounds like if he's been struggling at school and was only recently diagnosed with dyslexia, it means that for years, possibly in school, he's been comparing himself to other kids in his class and feeling like he's behind them or at some kind of disadvantage where they might find things easier and he's finding them harder when it comes to the typical kind of written and learning things that kids have to do up to that age. So he'd be, you know, if he's turning 10, he's probably maybe going into fourth class now. So maybe just finished third class. And so it could well be that his self-esteem has suffered as a consequence of that. So if he's always felt that he's not quite as good as the other kids in his class, and then when it comes to the soccer or the football, he's also getting put down by them and being told that he's no good at it, then that's definitely going to have an impact on how he feels about himself. And so I could imagine that's really, you know, at the heart of this emotional regulation, that he's just really struggling with his self-esteem and feeling pretty crappy about himself. And so that's where I think, you know, the mum could probably best invest a lot of her energy, is helping to build his self-esteem, letting him know that he's both loved and lovable and that he's very capable. Perhaps not necessarily in football, that mightn't be his you know, shining glory, but there are lots of other things I'm sure that he is very good at. And so it is often about both recognizing and just empathizing with kids that, yeah, it is hard when other people are mean about, you know, how you're doing things. And yet that's not the only thing that you know, you can be good at. And here are some of the things that you are very good at.
Well, how do you do that? Because, you know, even a 10-year-old kid will know that there is nothing like a mother's love, and that your mum is always going to support you to the hilt and tell you you're wonderful and you're gorgeous and you're the best child ever. And they're able to sort that out from the very different level of support that they get from other people in their lives. So how does a parent make a meaningful contribution to somebody's self-esteem?
So just because your son or daughter might feel that, you know, you have to say that, you know, I think the authenticity does shine through for parents. I think when we are genuinely acknowledging, you know, strengths that are actually there, it is, of course, you're dead right, really helpful if other people outside of the immediate family can also spot some of those strengths and give the feedback to the young person about that. So if it's the case that his teacher, for example, can find something, perhaps he mightn't be great at spelling, or he mightn't be great at the written work, but maybe there's something else that he's really good at in the class. And it would be great if the teacher could point that out, or the teacher could just acknowledge that. And again, acknowledge that publicly, even to let other kids know that this is a real strength that he has. And that might give him that sense of, oh, actually, yeah, I am okay. So by all means, bring in, you know, support from other people, whether it be sports coaches, if there's a different sport perhaps that he might, you know, feel that he's better at, something that's maybe not necessarily about kind of the group team sports, but something, again, where he can just feel that individual sense of achievement. And so get that feedback from whoever is kind of running that, whether it be a peer or an adult who's running that.
Let's move on to another one here. My almost 18-year-old daughter is struggling. She spends all her time in her room when at home. She doesn't eat meals, just snacks on junk food and coffee. She makes dinner for herself a few times a week or eats takeaway food. She works two evenings a week in a takeaway. We cannot motivate her to do anything. No hobbies, very few friends. I'm taking her to counselling. When there, she agrees to make an effort but doesn't put any of the recommendations into practice. She has a bad relationship with her siblings, tells me that she is sad, she's fed up, she's tired. Please, please help. Her dad and I tell her that we love her and are as supportive as we can be.
Yeah. Again, I often wonder, you know, when people say that they're going to counselling and that they're getting all this advice and guidance, you know, there's a big thing with any young person that if we're just giving them advice and guidance, but we're not showing them that we can really understand where they're at, they tend to reject a lot of the advice and guidance. And so it may be the case that perhaps the parents might want to go talk to the counselor or therapist and find out in what way, you know, is that therapist working with their daughter, because it could be that their daughter also feels like this is just another adult who's trying to tell tell them what to do and trying to tell them how to live their best life, and so may not necessarily feel fully engaged by that. So, you know, in any kind of change process, the first thing that, you know, anybody needs to do is recognize that they need to change. And so some of that for their daughter might be actually about recognizing that some of the things that she's doing are either really unhealthy, or that they're going to in some way isolate her, or perhaps lead to difficulties with some of the friendships, or even reduce the number of friendships that she has. But she has to see that that's a problem, as opposed to everybody else telling her that that's a problem.
I might be straying into an area that's unwarranted here, but when she describes her mood as sad, fed up and tired, I'm trying to wonder, is it a counsellor that she needs to see, or should she be going to see somebody else?
I suppose the thing that might jump to mind might be something like depression, when you hear those kinds of words being used. But I think, you know, any good, reputable counsellor is going to recognise when they're out of their depth with regard to something like that. So that if there is something like a mood disorder there, like depression, most counsellors who may feel that they don't have the expertise will spot that and go, look, I think this is beyond my remit. And I think you might need to go see someone like a psychiatrist or a clinical psychologist. But I guess, again, you're relying on the expertise of whoever, you know, you are taking her to counselling with when it comes to something like that, because certainly as a parent, there's no expectation that you should be spotting if your daughter may or may not have depression.
Okay, we move on to another one from a mum who says she has a 9-year-old girl who has not slept on her own for 5 months. Since we had a rat in our attic, we have done everything, but she is so upset, screaming, saying she can't do it. One of us has to sleep with her every night until she falls asleep. She goes to bed so late, nearly 11 o'clock. Oh my God, a 9-year-old at 11 o'clock. She said it could take her up to an hour to fall asleep, and if she hears you getting up, she will ask where you are going. We have brought back bedtime to 9 p.m., but it doesn't make a difference. We try rewards. If you do two nights, you will get X. She has slept only 2 consecutive nights, but we cannot get her to make it to the third night. We are all so exhausted. I'll bet they are.
So I would suggest that rather than focusing on her sleep and trying to use some kind of a reward system for her sleep, that they focus on the rat in the attic. Not a particularly nice topic, but the rat in the attic was, by the sounds of it, quite traumatic for their daughter. And so I would talk with her a lot about that, because I think if she can process the anxiety or the fear that she felt about that rat being in the attic and what that rat might be capable of doing or what might happen, because it could be that she has all sorts of, you know, really unpleasant fantasies in her head, like the rat gnawing its way through the ceiling and falling on top of her. And, you know, who knows what's in her head about that experience. And so I would talk with her a lot about the rat in the attic and how horrible that was and how frightening that was. And yet how well she was able to cope and how eventually the rat was caught and the rat is no longer there. And so that allows her to process more of that anxiety, because I think it's that anxiety that is then, of course, well, not of course, but most likely coming through when it comes to the sleeping. And so the sleeping is usually, something that gets very disrupted when we have not necessarily, you know, a problem with sleep, but just other anxieties in our lives.
So is rewards on this occasion the wrong approach?
I think it is. I wouldn't be overly focused on rewards. I think because it's not necessarily a behavioural issue. This is an emotional issue by the sounds of it, with regard to the fear, the anxiety that she felt about that time when there was the rat in the attic and what that meant for her. And it mightn't even necessarily be just the rat. It might be just her general sense of security. And so, you know, in order to be able to fall asleep, we have to feel fully comfortable. So, you know, all the conditions need to be right. But we also have to feel fully safe to be able to let go, to fall asleep. And so that, I think, is the key bit here for her.
We had a mouse in a bedroom issue very recently. I caught the mouse and I decided to show the dead mouse caught in a mouse trap to the child whose bedroom that it had been in. Good call, bad call?
I suppose the proof is in the pudding. You know, if it helped, you know, your son or daughter to go, yeah, that's great. Now I know that there's no mouse, and so therefore there's no danger or there's no potential for disruption in the night. Brilliant. You know, if it was the case that in itself was like, oh my God, a dead animal, and I can't believe you killed the mouse, and I didn't like the mouse in my room, but I didn't want it to be dead either. You know, so I guess it's all those different things, and there's no right or wrong answer. Well, so
not for the first time, a Claire Byrne show producer is chiding me and telling me that's an absolutely terrible, terrible idea. So you'll never know it. Let's move on. Since March, my five-year-old is having major separation issues with me, her mum. She was sick back in February and vomited in her grandparents' house and in the childminders on different occasions. She now appears to have huge anxiety going to these places. I've had to stop her going to both as she just gets too upset. She will not go anywhere without me now except for school and keeps saying she is afraid that she will miss me. Her dad passed away when she was a baby, so it is just the two of us. Wondering how to help her with this. A lot of pressure on me as her mum trying to work and all my support networks have been shut down for now until she gains her confidence again. Ooh, that is tricky, isn't it?
It is tricky. And when children are sick, we have to remember that they are like super vulnerable, not just necessarily with whatever bugs are in their body, but also I think emotionally, they're at a much lower ebb. And so if it was the case that she felt very sick to the point that she was vomiting and she didn't have her mum there, you know, simply perhaps to rub her back, and it was just that little bit of her mum's special care and attention that she perhaps needed when she was feeling that sick, I think that might be at the root of why she's now struggling, because she doesn't, again, a little bit like the last one, doesn't necessarily feel safe in these other two places with her grandparents or with the childminders in case she gets that sick again. Not that she doesn't feel safe generally, I'm sure she does, and she knows that they're all good people, but I think it's specifically probably a fear around getting sick again or being that sick and not having the particular you know, care and attention that her mum will give her. And you know, even though I know how much kids love their grandparents and I know how well kids get on with childminders, but it's not quite the same. You know, I think even with the best of intentions, nobody will go, you know, as far for a child as their own parent will. So it may be that that's the little piece that was missing, and that's the anxiety that if she got sick again, if she was that sick again, you know, and she wasn't with her mum, that things would be really, really bad. And so I think the more that the mum can talk with her about that and acknowledge that, do a lot of empathizing about that, about how scary that might have felt or how upsetting that was or how she might have loved to have had her mum there, or maybe there's something different that her mum might have done and her granny wasn't able to do it, or the childminder wasn't able to do it. And the more that the daughter gets to talk about that, now she's only obviously five, so you know, you're not expecting necessarily that the daughter herself is going to be doing a lot of the talking, but this is about the mum filling in some of those blanks and doing a lot of guessing about how her daughter might have felt. And I think that will show her daughter then that the mum gets it, that this was potentially quite frightening for her at the time, and that she, there was a little piece missing. And then the mum can reassure her that actually her granny or actually the childminder are going to be well able to look after should that happen again.
And interesting that the dad passed away when she was an infant, so you would assume that single parent status is her normal, but it could possibly be feeding into the anxiety because there is only the one parent there.
Yeah. Now, usually, I mean, so the anxiety would be probably even greater if the mum had gotten sick, because I think that's often the big worry for children with single parents, particularly where one parent has died, that if the other parent gets sick, then what happens to me? And so, yeah, so I'm not sure necessarily that the single parent bit is the most important when it comes to her being sick, other than that, you know, she probably has a particularly close bond with her mum because of the fact that, you know, it's the two of them together moving through the world at this stage. And so, yeah, but I think that's, again, about the mum acknowledging that, yeah, I do have a critically important role for my daughter, and yet there are other people who can be of help to her, as long as I can let her know that I completely get that that was just a really difficult time for her back in February.
David, thank you once again so much for your insight. Very valuable, very helpful, one hopes. David Coleman there. An apparent attack on the Russian-built Kerch Bridge to Crimea. We're going to get the latest from Scott Lucas after these.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.